Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where to start? There's just so much going on.
Well, I think the way to start is by acknowledging that there were a lot of blowouts today in the college football landscape and yesterday as well. These games have been extremely lopsided, which is disappointing. Was hoping for a more competitive product, but hopefully the night ends up finishing strong with a close battle between Ohio State and Tennessee.
Does that automatically lead to maybe not so fast on 16, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. I think that this is the clearest indication that we can't even expand this thing to 14. I would be really, really frustrated, and I think a lot of college fans should be frustrated if this does expand to 14. We know why they wanted a larger playoff. It has less to do with giving more teams an opportunity to compete for a national title and more to do about the broadcast entities, specifically ESPN, having more games that they can broadcast during this period of the year where the attention of the viewer is easier to capture because it's during the holidays. But I don't think that they can realistically and willingly put out a product that is 16 or 14 teams. Anyone who knows anything about FCS football and follows it knows that most of the first-round games are blowouts, and that's a 24-team team playoff. So to see this between what could have been competitive matchups be so lopsided is pretty highly disappointing.
I think the only devil's advocate that I could play is people are going to say, Joe, but Alabama didn't get in. But what about the 13th team? Did they just get it wrong? Did Indiana get in when they shouldn't have? Is Boise State supposed to be a top seed? I think that's the only pushback there is.
Well, that is also where I think all of this frustration comes into play, is that the selection process is also a problem. If we had put in – I think that there's a nuanced argument for why Indiana deserved to have been in the mix, because – they at least blew out every single team that they saw that wasn't Ohio State. SMU didn't do that. Boise State didn't do that going up against a G5 schedule. So they need to adjust and shift this process for how they're building and projecting these seeds. Because right now it's a mess. Like, we're witnessing a lot of just brutal bad games because of what you just mentioned there. At the very, very least, we should have seen Ole Miss or Alabama squaring off, instead of SMU against Penn State.
Talking to our buddy Joe DeLeon of the Believe Podcast Network. Make sure you check out his stuff on the college and pro level. All right, we know UGA now here locally, Joe, is going to be taking on the Fighting Irish. Any reason to believe that UGA shouldn't be able to get it done, even with their backup quarterback? I think Notre Dame looked very good today. I love their defense, but I think still top to bottom, I'd still see UGA as the stronger roster. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that game is going to be a lot closer than people realize. I think that Notre Dame affirmed, and the score was close between Notre Dame and Indiana, but it doesn't reflect how dominant Notre Dame was in that game, because a number of those points at the very end were scored off of a late touchdown drive in garbage minutes, then an onside kick recovery, and then another touchdown. So removing that, it would have ended up being a much larger blowout if Notre Dame hadn't mailed it in at the end. But the reason why I think this game is close is that there's, one, a bit of the wild card of what happens with Gunnar Stockton. Can he be a catalyst? Can he be Stetson Bennett and play the way that he is, or the way that he impacted for Georgia when he was the starting quarterback? I think that we saw a different level of play at quarterback on offense where he was willing and aggressive to extend plays with his legs, something that Carson Beck doesn't do. And that was what made Stetson Bennett so successful. And that's something that I think a lot of Georgia fans should be excited about, that this offense now has an extra layer when it was struggling at times to get success on the ground and get success success through the air. But at that same point, they're going to have to deal with blocking a very stout and aggressive Notre Dame defensive line and linebacking corps. They've got a lot of really good athletes, and Georgia has had some troubles consistently running the ball and having good run blocking against some of their opponents. In some of their worst games, they've had some brutal days. And the other part, we know that Georgia's receiving corps at times there's a lot of concentration issues with coming out with the football. And in the Indiana game, we were affirmed that Notre Dame's secondary, their corners are great at playing really tight, close coverage. They're really good at taking advantage of balls that are thrown into contested tight areas and turning those into turnovers. A lot of it's going to come down to if Notre Dame is forced into the same situation that Georgia did with Quinn Ewers, where they said, all right, Quinn, if you're so good, you beat us. And he threw a ton of passing attempts. They couldn't run the ball because they took that away, and then led to turnovers. And I think they're going to try to apply the same thing for Riley Leonard.
Any chance you think Ohio State gets picked off?
I think it's very plausible for that to happen tonight. I think that's 100% in the mix because, well, one, it's crazy seeing how well-traveled the Tennessee fans are. That was something that was very unexpected. If I told you that a couple of weeks ago, that was going to happen. But as we heard, more and more murmurs that there was going to be an aggressive, push by these Tennessee fans to show up. I'm curious to see what the color combinations are in that stadium for tonight's game. But where there's a world for Tennessee to win, it comes with their defensive line and how deep it is. Omar Norman Lott and James Ferris Jr. are really, really good players, and they're just two of the top guys amongst a group that continues to rotate and get pressures against opposing offensive lines. Right now, Ohio State is super banged up. Josh Simmons, their left tackle, had a phenomenal start to the year, went down very early with the season-ending injury, and Seth McGoffin with the torn Achilles. They've been playing musical chairs. They've been trying to figure stuff out. And in games where they have seen athletic edge rushers, like against Penn State when they saw Abdul Carter, they had trouble. Will Howard saw a lot of pressures. He was getting hit quite often. So that's the big thing to focus on here. If Tennessee gets it done, it's going to be because they get in Will Howard's face and they're able to get after him and they're able to slow down that rushing attack a little bit. Ohio State's going to need to rely on their playmakers if they're going to want to win, and they're going to need to get the ball out quickly.
Any issue or concern, I guess would be the better word, that Oregon basically hasn't had to be ramped up in like 6 weeks? Because essentially they really just haven't had any pressure on them, and Dan Lanning has had to create, I guess, intensity out west because they've basically been sitting on their hands now for how long, Joe?
Well, the one thing I would acknowledge with that is that the way that they played in the Big Ten championship game, I think, is an extra late season catalyst for them. So they had the early season big win over Ohio State that sparked this run that they had throughout the entirety of the year during the regular season. And then they face off with a really good Penn State team, which that defense is phenomenal. The way that they played against SMU reminded us of how good, how smothering, and how athletic they are on that defense. For them to put up the points that they did and to get the big chunk plays that they did through the passing game, I think that really paints the picture for how good Oregon can be. So them having this, this week off, and since the Big Ten championship game, the little bit of a buffer, it's more than a week, but this little bit of a buffer before they see the winner of the Ohio State versus Tennessee game, I think that they've got enough confidence, and I think more importantly, Dan Lanning is the type of a coach that is preparing his guys and is great at rallying his troops to come out fighting and firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, my only concern is just we've seen it here locally with the Braves as they won the division a couple of years back-to-back and then got this time off, and it sort of killed their momentum. And they went in flat back-to-back years against Philly, and they got ousted. If for no other reason other than Philly had to scratch and claw their way to get to where they are now. And we've just seen Oregon on cruise control essentially all season long and
right.
And not face the type of competition, as you just alluded to, even in the championship game where their backs have been up against the wall and who knows what's going to happen in the playoff.
Well, the only thing, and it's a fair point to bring up, there's always that concern, and I always wonder, and I kind of wondered with this expanded playoff, if having the bye is as much of an advantage as people think. You have to, you know, go out there and play a conference championship game to earn it. So you're still playing an extra game. It's just shifting the timeline of when you get that week off. But the big difference here is that I feel like baseball, more than football, is really a sport about momentum and how teams are finishing. And it's a lot of times it's just who's the hottest team at the end of the year. If you catch that swing of momentum at the end of the year, that's really what's led to a lot of success for World Series champions or teams that have just gotten there. So it's fair to bring up with baseball. The big difference is there's a lot more preparation that goes into the coaching of the game of football. So for Dan Lanning, who's an amazing coach, and he's got a great coaching staff, to have all this extra time to prepare, to re-prepare against Ohio State or to prepare to play Tennessee, depending on who wins, I think that's where the advantage comes into play. But it is a concern that's worth bringing up. I'd be curious to see how all of the teams, all four of the teams that had byes are going to play that they were granted this time off, and if it's either going to be a blessing or a curse.
Before I let you go, I want to get your take. The Falcons are starting Michael Penix Jr. tomorrow. You obviously watch a ton of him in college, both at Indiana and at Washington. You think he's ready for it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the bigger talking point here is, you know, how can he really be much worse than what Kirk Cousins was doing? And the thing that you get the difference with throwing Penix is that he is, one, a good athlete, and not in the, you know, the conventional just he's going to run around type of good athlete. I'm talking about he has got a great presence in the pocket. He has a cannon for an arm. I think that even if he goes out there and he makes your typical rookie mistakes, that he is still going to be aggressive enough downfield to be able to take more shots, the shots that I feel like Kirk was not willing to take. And if he has a turnover, it's going to be less of a turnover because of the play not going the way that it should have and him making a bad read. And instead, Michael Penix being the guy that he is, that is just being aggressive and trying to make a play happen. I think that this could be a spark. And one thing that's been really, and I tweeted about this watching Thursday Night Football with watching Bo Nix play, there does need to be a little bit of a ramp up for Penix to have like a, you know, a string of good games. It's not going to be hit the ground running immediately with any rookie quarterback. But these guys that have played a ton of college football that were fifth-year, sixth-year seniors like Penix and Nix, they're more ready to go than people realize. It is a different world with those players that have been around so long, and it's something that with the way that the quarterback market in the draft, I think, changed so much that we didn't get as much exposure to these types of prospects for a while. And instead, we're starting to remind ourselves that the young guys, like Caleb Williams and Drake May and Anthony Richardson and these young players, they're the ones that are going to struggle. Bo Nix and Michael Penix, for how much ball they played and how many tight, high-pressure situations they saw in college, it has built them for this moment. I wouldn't be shocked if Michael Penix doesn't go out there and play some awesome football and maybe inspire a, you know, just a very late push to help them sneak into the playoffs.
All right, Joe, appreciate the time. As always, again, make sure you check out his work on the Believe Network, college and pro analyst. We'll talk to you again soon.
Of course. Thanks for having me, as always.